Now we come to the functions of the State Pollution Control Board. So they advise the state government on matters concerning the prevention, control and abatement of air pollution. As I said, because the state board works also very closely with the state government in addition to with the central board. They collect and disseminate information relating to air pollution. They basically restrict themselves to their own state and certain areas of concern. So when we are talking of Kanpur or we are talking of Agra, so this kind of information also can be collected and disseminated, or it could be the pollution in certain metro cities, you know. So this would be the job of the state board. Also to collaborate with the central board in organizing the training of persons engaged. Whenever there is an upgradation of the standard, many a times the people who are enforcing this also need to upgrade their understanding of the standards and how to check for compliance, because unless they know this, they cannot enforce the new standards. So they collaborate with the central board in training the persons who are engaged in the enforcement of the acts. To inspect air pollution control areas at such intervals as may think necessary. Generally, they will go to the industry, a lot of industries which have a chimney, etc., what we call as a stack. They already have certain provisions where a probe can be put. So these agencies will come and they will monitor to see whether the amount of carbon dioxide, monoxide, sulfur dioxide that you are releasing to the atmosphere, and then whether you are exercising adequate controls. Because at certain times you are supposed to, before releasing any air effluent, you have to treat it by scrubbing it with certain chemicals or with water to remove the suspended particles or to remove certain gases. Or you have to, you have the flame scrubber where certain poisonous gases or inflammable gases are actually burned before they are released to the atmosphere. So when you burn them, you are actually releasing carbon dioxide and water. So they will actually come and check whether you are complying with these standards and your emissions are within the specified limits or not. They also advise the state government with respect to the suitability of any premises or location for carrying out any industrial activity which is likely to cause air pollution. So if there is a monument, they will tell the government whether a certain type of industry can be set up there, and if the kind of pollution that a particular industry is likely to cause is going to affect the monument, then the state board will advise the government against allowing such an industry. There are a number of NOCs and permissions which need to be taken while setting up a plant or a production site. So this environment is one of them, and this is precisely the reason why these permissions are required, so that they check whether any damage will be caused to the monument or any habitat of wildlife, any wildlife sanctuaries is not affected by this installation. I am reminded of one particular incident in one of the companies that I work. We had a quarrying operation. Quarry is basically open mine. Mine is when you go deep into the ground and it's generally closed in structure. The quarry is when you are actually removing the top portion of the soil and you are removing the ore. So we were removing bauxite, which is the aluminum ore, and our mines were at Durgamanwadi. So Durgamanwadi is near Kolhapur, and very close to this site is a wildlife sanctuary for wild bisons or wild buffaloes. So the quarrying operation creates a lot of noise. It also creates a lot of dust, and you will find the area around that place will be covered in this bauxite dust. So the state pollution control board intervened and we had to stop our operations. So this is also one of the functions of the state pollution control boards. Also to perform such other functions as may be prescribed or as from time to time by the central board or by the state government. Further, to do such other things and perform such other acts as it may think necessary for the proper discharge of its function and generally for the purpose of carrying into effect the purpose of this act. Basically, they monitor the quality, air quality. They do certain surprise checks. We talked about, you know, the checks that they go to the industry and do, but most of the state boards have this mobile van which go and monitor the quality of the ambient air. And what they do is they go to the some of the industrial areas, like in Maharashtra you have the MIDC areas, etc., where you have a cluster of industries, and they will go and monitor the quality of the air. So if there is any alarming change, they will basically caution the state government and also initiate appropriate action to see who is actually polluting the air, and penal action can be initiated against them. So a state board may establish or recognize laboratories to enable the state board to perform its function under this section efficiently. Just as the central board, state board also establishes or recognizes laboratories. Because it may not always be possible to establish their own laboratories everywhere, so they also recognize some of the local laboratories who meet their standards, what we call as the accredited or certified laboratories, who are following the test methods and procedures as prescribed by the state board. So let's look at the power that the state and the central boards have. So they have the power to declare air pollution control areas. So when you say air pollution control area, you are demarcating an area which will be subject to a certain standard. You may be aware that we are talking of the Bharat Standard 3, Bharat Standard 4, and these are applicable in the metro cities. But if you go to the class 2 cities or class 3 cities or even to rural areas, there is no restriction. The reason being that this air pollution control areas, like the city which have been defined by the state board, these stringent standards apply only there. Or the other example we took of Agra, it will have certain very stringent standards which would make sure that certain kind of industries cannot operate there, and only non-polluting or industries which are very low in pollution can operate in such areas. Power to give instructions to the state government. So the central boards can also give instructions to the state government for imposition of certain standards. While we were talking about this declare air pollution control areas, I was also reminded of making of this CNG use compulsory is another example. If you see in cities today, autos, etc., are not allowed to operate on petrol or diesel. They have to operate on CNG. So this is again because of the air pollution control areas, because you have very high density of the traffic and you need to control the level of pollution. We already covered this point of instructions to the state government. Power of the board to make application to the court. So in case of the Kanpur tanneries, or even in certain cases, we talked about the Durgumanwadi, the bauxite mine, the board can actually make an application to the court and bring a stay, or force a company to shut down its operations which are polluting in nature. Power of entry and inspection, we have already seen that both boards have the power to actually enter any premises without prior intimation and carry out surprise checks. Power to obtain information, that means they can demand all kind of information about your process, about your compliances, about your discharge. So there are certain things which they may not be able to measure, but they certainly can ask you about your processes, the quality of your processes, kind of fuel you are using, all those kind of things. Power to take samples of air or emission, so that means they can measure within your premises, in your stack, or even outside your premises. Central board to exercise the powers of state board in the union territories. Now, union territories are very small areas, so they do not have a state board of their own. So there the central board also exercises the role of the state board. So this is the power of the central board as far as the union territories are concerned. Penalties, again, wherever you fail to comply with the provisions of section 21 or section 22, the directions are issued under section 31A, which is regarding the punishments and penalties, and it can attract punishment and with imprisonment for a term starting from 1 year and 6 months, and a fine which may be 5,000 rupees, but this is for a small unit depending upon the seriousness. As we saw in the case of water pollution, it can be very, very high. So basically these are to deter people from polluting the air and to ensure that the proper measures are in place. There are also other penalties which are defined for failure to comply with the act. So, and these are cognizable offenses, that means they can be tried in a court of law, and which is understandable because the penalties are not just monetary penalties, but they also attract imprisonment. And as you know, in civil matters generally there is no imprisonment, it's only in the criminal matters. So this is cognizance, or what we call as a criminal offense, to pollute the air. We now come to the Environmental Protection Act of 1986. So this was earlier not given so much importance, but after we had the Bhopal gas tragedy, suddenly we realized the seriousness of some of the operations, and we also realized the kind of consequences that negligence in this area can result in. So the government has subsequently, 84, the Bhopal tragedy took place, and by 86 they have implemented this Environmental Protection Act, which was to basically tighten up the pollution control laws. So here, when we talk of the environmental protection, we are talking of water, we are talking of air, we are talking of land, which means soil. We are also talking of forest, which we saw in the case of Durgamanwadi and the bauxite incident, and surrounding atmosphere, which we are talking of the ozone layer, etc. And what is not mentioned here is things like monuments. So any heritage sites or monuments, any sanctuaries or protected forests, etc., everything is covered under this. So in the year 1986 the act was formed, and it has been put into practice. And it is supposed to take care of the entire aspect of the environment. That means it doesn't deal selectively with only water, air, also it deals with everything. So air, water, soil, and it talks about the ecology, talks about the atmosphere, ozone layer, everything is covered under this. So rules to regulate the environmental pollution. So the rules as per the act define the standards of quality of air, water or soil for various areas. So again, we talked about the control areas. There can be difference between areas as far as the compliance is concerned. As we said, cities, generally metro cities, have the most stringent quality standards, because you have a very high density, and even moderate level of pollutant being released by the vehicles can result in a Beijing or a Shanghai kind of a situation. Shanghai is not that serious, but Beijing is given as a worst case example. The maximum allowable limits or concentration of various pollutants for different areas are defined. So what is the maximum amount of carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide or sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxide, suspended particulate matter. So all these limits are defined, as per this act. The procedures and safeguards for handling of the hazardous substances are defined here. There are a lot of hazardous materials, and when we say hazardous, it may not be only poisonous materials or radioactive materials, even materials which are non-biodegradable. So the procedure and safeguard for handling these are all specified. Let me tell you, in industry there are plenty of materials which fall under this hazardous substance category, and these have to be handled with utmost care in order to prevent any liability. The prohibition and restrictions on the handling of hazardous substances in different areas. So certain areas you cannot carry out certain activities. If you are unit or as part of your production process, you are managing some hazardous substances. One example that I remember was we have a plant, or we had a plant at Roha, which is on the banks of Kundalika River, and we wanted to build a warehouse there, because as the plant operations were growing, we were falling short of the warehouses. So we took a space and we were to build a warehouse. A regulation came into effect which said that within 500 meters of a river, you cannot have a warehouse. And since we were a chemical unit and some of our finished products could be falling under this category, we could not put up our warehouse. So this is what we mean by prohibition and restriction on handling of hazardous substances. That means whether it is handling, storage, processing, you cannot do it in certain areas. So these are certain zonal restrictions. The prohibition and restriction on the location of industries and carrying out the processing operations in different areas. We have talked about Virgumanwadi again. We have talked about Kanpur. We have talked about Agra industries. So these are the locational restrictions in specific area where you cannot carry out certain activities. The procedures and safeguards for the prevention of accidents which may cause environmental pollution, and for providing remedial action for such accidents. So Bhopal incident is one of them. A very safe operations goes wrong, an accident takes place, and hundreds of people die. So you, as I said, industry is handling a lot of hazardous material, sometimes toxic materials, etc. So it's important that very high level of safeguards and safety standards are maintained to prevent any kind of an accident in future. Also, you may not be aware, but a lot of times, there may be materials which are moving on the road. Like, you must have seen the LPG tankers. These are a very, very serious hazard. So what the procedures and safeguards ensure is that the accidents are prevented, so that there is no negative impact on the environment or in terms of pollution, and providing remedial measures for such accidents. So in case an accident happens, how do you remedy it? how do you counter it? How do you limit the damages and control it? We talked about the LPG tankers. You know, whenever any hazardous material is transported by road, even things like acids, etc., you have a document called as trump card, which gives details of what is the material, what is the kind of a hazard it poses, whether it's poisonous, whether it is an irritant, irritant for the eye, for the nose. It's corrosive in nature, that means if you come in contact, you may have this, you know, suffer from burns. And how to control it, whom to contact in case of an emergency, all this is contained. There is also another document called as MSDS, which is Material Safety Data Sheet, which also gives similar information on who to contact, what is the nature of hazard for the particular material, what is its class as far as transportation is concerned, and what kind of packing it requires, what kind of precautions it requires during transportation. So all this is part of the procedures and safeguards which is specified by this Environmental Act. Environmental laboratories, the central government has powers to establish one or more environmental laboratories. We have already seen why. We have explained this case in case of water and air, it's the same thing here. So they can also recognize one or more laboratories as environmental laboratories to carry out the functions entrusted to environmental labs. So basically it's to ensure they follow standard methods, procedures, and they have consistent results. So a particular sample tested across different labs should be very close or within a certain range. The results should not be very disparate. The central government may be by notification in official gazette make rules specifying the functions of the laboratory. So the central government actually can guide on the role of these labs. The procedure for the submission to the said laboratory of samples of air, water, soil or other substances for analysis or tests, the form of laboratory report and the fees payable, so these also are specified. So it means they give a guidance on how the samples are to be collected, what kind of containers, how they are supposed to be transported, what are the kind of analysis to be done, the report will be in what form, the tests have to comply with what standards, and what are the kind of fees which have to be paid. And this is because many a times the industry submits samples, because not every industry can afford to have this kind of in-house setup. So when we talk about air pollution, you know, industries do generally have, the larger industries have their own equipment for monitoring the discharge from the stack, or wherever there is an effluent treatment plant, they have a small lab which can test the quality of the water which is being discharged after treatment, what we call as after pre-treatment, or sometimes it can be the complete treatment of the effluent. So the smaller units cannot afford it, and in such cases the industry has to give samples to the private labs for checking compliance. So laboratories have the government analysts. They are authorized to take samples and hand over to the central and the state boards for further action as per the Environmental Control Act. So wherever they are taking samples, the government agencies are taking samples, and the samples are tested. If they are found to be non-compliant, then they can escalate this matter to the central or the state boards for taking suitable action. Again, coming to penalties for contravention of the provisions of this act. So whoever fails to comply with or contravenes the provisions of this act is punishable with imprisonment, for a term which can be 5 years. You can see here that in previous cases we saw the minimum term was a year and a half. Here you can see it has been extended to 5 years, and the penalty which can be up to a lakh of a 1 lakh rupee. If the failure of the, or contravention referred to in subsection 1 continues beyond a period of 1 year after the date of conviction, the offender shall be punished with imprisonment or a term which may not be extended to, which may be extended to 7 years. That means up to 7 years of imprisonment can be granted for these violations. And again, as I said, the offender could mean right from the people operating the processes up to the occupier, which means the plant manager, etc. And in some cases, it could be even the CEO or the MD or directors of the company who can be faced with this penal actions. So with that, we come to the end of this chapter. Thank you.